Hello, I'm Jeff Davis, and I sure hope this podcast finds you safe, healthy, and virus-free. You know, it's crazy that I can make that statement, send this podcast across the globe, and I'm confident you're familiar with what I'm referring to. We're all in this virus madness together. Maybe when this is over, it'll make us realize that we humans share this earth, and we should be good neighbors worldwide. It can only help us. You know, speaking of good people, I often talk about the wonderful folk I meet in the wine industry. Most are pleasant, down-to-earth, hospitable, generous, and usually quite approachable. Today's guest possesses those qualities and more, and he's been part of a rich history in Napa Valley. As a result, he'll be my sole guest for today's podcast. He's Robert, or Bob, Bialy of Napa Valley's Robert Bialy Vineyards. One thing you'll learn is, way back in the day, people in the know would ask for the black chicken. Why? Let's find out on the Wine Road.
Old vineyards are in the ground these days for one simple reason, and that's because they're very good. They're planted in the right spot. They're being well taken care of, and somebody loves them.
Dearly.
Dearly.
In January, I recorded three interviews to promote Zinfandel Advocates and Producers' annual ZinX, or Zinfandel Experience. It's 3 days of tastings, flights, and dinners, culminating with the grand tasting on Saturday, featuring nearly 100 wineries from all over Northern California. Most tables are attended by the winemakers and or owners. There's one scheduled for New York City on June 2nd. That is if we can gather again by then. Details are at Zinfandel.org. Robert Bialy is the first of two podcasts featuring Zinfandel producers. Bob is a three-generation Italian grape grower and vintner, and a proud proponent of Zinfandel. He's full of good stories, too, so let's get to it.
Bob, I was going to say, if I had 1 acre, every time I've interviewed about a hard-working Italian immigrant who left a legacy in Sonoma and Napa County on my show, I would have a huge vineyard right now, because there's been so many of them. And your grandfather, Pietro Bialy, certainly is one of those immigrants.
Yes, he arrived in the 20s, and for the same reason as many of those folks did, for a better living. He met my grandmother here in California, in San Francisco, actually, who was another hardworking woman. As a matter of fact, she once had a job at the cannery in San Francisco, and she got sick, and really, really sick, you know, and she needed some time off. And she reluctantly asked her supervisor for some time off. And the lady goes, or no, actually it was a man, he said, "Absolutely, Christina, you take as much time as you want because you work as much as two men put together." and you know, these are, you know, statements that, you know, we probably shouldn't say these days. But, you know, the fact is, she was just a plain old hard worker. And so together with my grandfather, they put together a little farm, and that did well. But it wasn't unusual. They weren't doing anything different than possibly their neighbors, right? All working very, very hard, doing what they knew best. And, you know, gratefully, by the grace of God, we still have that ranch today and making these great wines from those vineyards.
He planted Zinfandel after Prohibition, just a few years afterwards, and but he also had nuts and fruit and chickens on the property. So, right. And even still, he was having trouble making ends meet, so he had to get another job.
Exactly right. And that wasn't unusual either. You know, Italians kind of hedged their bets, and they really made every inch of their soil work. And so his little ranch didn't look any different than probably a lot of other Italian little ranches. As a matter of fact, they had actually more chickens than anything else. They had hundreds of chickens, and they were making a little bit of a living on that and selling their grapes, although not for very much, unfortunately. And that's what led to to my dad's kind of clandestine project, right? That.
Funny, because that's the exact same word I used when I was going to get to that point. But briefly, before we get to that point, unfortunately, your grandfather was killed with that other job he was doing.
Right. So on that second job, he was actually working in a quarry here in Napa. And tragically, his team didn't make it home one day. And that forever changed my grandmother and my father's life, of course. That was in 1942. My dad was only 13 years old. And so my dad really needed us. Well, he felt compelled to step up and make extra money. Sure. And he was scratching his head, literally, how to do that. And then he just realized that, doggone, we have grapes here. We're making a little bit of wine. Why don't we just make a little bit more and sell it? And, of course, don't worry about that license or permit. He's 14 and he's thinking about it. Actually, he's 13. And then when he actually starts this project, he's 14. And he comes up with this idea, really, to make wine and sell it and not worry about a license or permit. And in those days, people, customers, would call in for their orders of eggs and chickens and anything else they were selling on this party line phone system. You know, it's public, right? That doesn't really resonate with younger folks, obviously.
Sure. They can't understand the concept of a party line.
Right, not even close. But it was a public phone line. And of course, I grew up that way. And of course, everyone knew about that. And they knew it was public. And he's a boy, and he knew that if people were to be calling in, everyone on that line would be listening in, of course, and being a little bit nosy, as everyone is.
Well, it was a source of entertainment, I imagine,
exactly.
At the time.
I remember distinctly when the phone rang in the house, I ran over and picked it up just because I'm curious. It's entertaining. It's like, you know, it's just people are people. So he knew that. So he came up with this way to sell wine, and it was a code word. And people would call in, and they would go, "Hey, Aldo, I need 3 dozen eggs and a black chicken." And it was his code word for that jug of Zinfandel that he sold for $1 for 1 gallon. And the cool thing about it is that he was selling grapes for $25. I didn't learn this until later, of course. But he was selling grapes for $25 a ton. And he later said, you know, that still wasn't really working. You know, it's not a lot of money now, and it just wasn't really working then either. But he knew he can press grapes off at 150 gallons a ton. So if he sold it at $1 a gallon, that's $150 a ton compared to 25. Nice. And it was like he's 14, and he figured that out. And I'm going, good job, Dad.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a little tiny thing like that that helped him kind of propel a little bit further and make a little bit more, and he did it for like a good 25 years. And it's like, all right, this is what we're doing.
And the great thing is, and the historic value is, you still have a label with black chicken on it, and here we are. 50 years plus later.
Right. You know, I kind of grew up in the weeds with this, so it didn't really mean to, the significance of all this didn't really mean too much. I thought everybody had wine on their table and, you know, this, and this black chicken and whatnot. The story, we were too, a little too close to it, if you know what I mean, to understand the significance. But my childhood friend, Dave Pramuk, who was a partner in the business, well, I should back up just a bit. We went legit in 91. And so we brought on two friends, Al Perry and Dave Pramuk. And
so, but until that point, you weren't legit. That's a long time.
That's a long time. That's okay. It's okay.
I want to throw in one more piece of history. Right. Your dad used to drive around and deliver the product and the wine in his Studebaker, right, which is still in the family.
It sure is. Yeah. His 1940 Studebaker that every Friday he'd deliver all the orders. Unless they came by the yard and picked them up, but more often than not, he would make all the deliveries. And one of my dad's last projects was to restore the Studebaker to its brilliance. And oh my goodness, I'm so glad he took that project on. It's really glorious. We're really grateful to him for doing that. Yeah, we bring it to the winery every once in a while. My brother has that now, and it's his lucky job to keep it in its pristine condition, and he drives it around and whatnot.
That's some amusing history there from the Bialy family. You can see that 1940 Studebaker on their website, Bialy.com, Biale.com, and his father Aldo holding a black chicken. And how clever he was selling that wine covertly on the party line. Bob left the farm after high school, and I wondered if he worked the ranch when he was younger before leaving.
Sure, you know, until I left, which was actually at 18, I went to the Navy, and then I did a number of other things, and I returned like when I was 30 or something, 32 maybe, something like that. So I left for a while. But of course, up until that time, my dad heavily relied on us boys.
I bet.
I mean, you can imagine. We worked very hard. And not unlike any other family that grew up in this business. You know, the vineyard was where all the work was.
Yeah, I didn't realize you had a brother. I didn't see that on your website. But I was going to ask you, were you confident enough in the strength of the business that you felt comfortable leaving at that age?
Well, so the vineyard end of the business is one thing, and my dad's little clandestine operation was another. But then in 91, so by that time, I was in my early 30s. And in 91, we went to this whole nother level of professional, you know, production. And so that's where this started. And so I was back and I never left.
Right. Well, you can't because your name's on the label now.
Right.
I was going to ask you why you chose, and I don't mean this in, you know, I'm not pointing fingers or anything or wondering about your ego, but, you know, why did you decide to go with Robert Bialy Vineyards instead of just like Bialy or?
Right. You know, that really wasn't a personal choice. We sat down in a little, I guess you'd call it a marketing meeting, with Dave Allen, my dad, Aldo. And for some reason, honest to goodness, for some reason, everyone thought it should be personalized and everyone thought the name Robert would be just a fine enough name to go with. I'm going fine, you know, whatever.
It worked for another winery in this valley too.
Well, yes, it did. But it had little significance at the time, and we all just went with it. Dave Pramick was, as time went on, he grew into the sales and marketing end of it all. I thought we had a good group, if you know what I mean. My dad and I were operations. Al Perry was our winemaker for 18 years and set the course for our style. And then Dave, of course, set the image for the brand, which is not insignificant either.
And I liked the comment on your website that Dave said he was spreading the gospel of Zinfandel and Petite Sirah. So sounds like he was... Well, all of you are well supportive of the grape variety and the history.
So that's well said. We had one common mission, and we all loved the grape, not only Zinfandel but Petite Syrah as well, these heritage varieties. So in that sense, it was kind of easy, you know, that we didn't have conflicting missions or visions.
Right.
Because that can bring something down also. We just moved forward with that one mission. We started with one from our oldest block, Aldo's Vineyard, as we call it. Now we have like 15. You know, we really have embraced this mission. And of course, we have some Petite Syrahs as well. And we don't feel tempted at all to deviate. So that's another cool thing. I mean, it's not like we have this big temptation to, we're in Napa Valley, and why don't we do Cabernet? Yeah. Well, we just don't have a temptation to do it. Our big wine category are the Petite Syrahs, and we think they can done well, grown on the right sites, really feel they can match any, you know, kind of like big wine satisfaction, including Cabernet.
And it's such a good partner with Zinfandel as well. Yeah. So often you blend the two.
Exactly. It can overwhelm a great Zinfandel if you overdo it. But more often than not, it does add a little bit of texture and finish, and being done carefully, it can be very, very good.
I'd like to point out that of the 15 varietals Robert Bialy Vineyards bottle, they source from a number of iconic Napa and Sonoma County vineyards like Bedrock, Monte Rosso, the Old Craft Vineyard, Pagani Ranch, Stagecoach, Limerick Lane, and their own Aldo's Vineyard. That's a respectable lineup.
Right. And R.W. Moore, I'll throw that one in there, planted in 1905. Right. These are, as you say, iconic. They just are. And there's a reason why old vineyards have remained in the ground. Old vineyards are in the ground these days for one simple reason, and that's because they're very good. They're planted in the right spot. They're being well taken care of, and somebody loves them.
Dearly.
And hopefully they're being compensated well for them, because that certainly helps as we find out. But we're really fortunate to be a part of this this group. For some of those vineyards you mentioned, we take all the fruit. In others, we are fortunate to be a part of a group of people who get a small amount. And I have to admit, it's great fun to be a part of a group like that. And we do side-by-side tastings as often as we can, you know, here at the winery or elsewhere, and compare all these wines coming from the same vineyard. And, you know, that's just pure joy, right? I mean, if you live in our world, to do an experience like that, have an experience like that, yeah, it doesn't get much better, in my opinion, honestly. To taste wines from the same vineyard, made slightly differently, probably, but all trying very, very hard to honor that vineyard and not throw their big old ego into it. And that's where the real joy comes from, in the way I see it, my opinion.
And you know, the public's going to have a chance at that coming up with Zapp's Flights event that's happening on Friday morning at 10:30 on January 30th. I'm going to be there because I saw the list of people and vineyards that are going to be featured. Bedrock is certainly one of them, and a number of others that were just like Black Sears is another incredible vineyard. And I couldn't pass up going to that event.
Good job. And you know, in this particular lineup, in this particular format, it's from the viewpoint of the grower themselves. Being a grower, I like that, obviously. I like that perspective because it's, in my opinion, a very pure look at the vineyard. Winemakers can tend to throw a little spin on it, put their influence, their personality into it. I think the best try not to do that. But growers, on the other hand, they are really simply caretaking this vineyard and really shepherding it into the next generation. And that handing off the baton is really their main goal, to offer to the winemaker the purest expression. And it just doesn't get any better than to be able to grow something like that and then offer it to the winery and say, okay, this is the best I can do, God and me,
and
Mother Nature, and here it is, and like, good luck with it.
And I can safely say that attendees will certainly see the passion behind the growers and what they're doing for a living.
Right. And you know, these days, I mean, especially in Napa, but elsewhere also, in other appellations, the bar has really been raised to not only make the wine, but to grow the grapes. And and the things that we do these days is far from the way I grew up. Although when I grew up, everything was organic. Absolutely. 100% organic. We still don't do any herbicides or whatnot. We take care of all that by hand.
And it's good to see so many vineyards today going back to the old world ways of organic farming. One of the reasons we got together was to talk about the annual Zinfandel Experience, or ZinX, Bob is not only a board member of the Zinfandel Advocates and Producers, who present ZinX each year, he's also a former president of the organization.
Right, right. You know, if you're on the board, everyone's got to go pass through that that mantle there. And yeah, I was very proud to do it, very happy to do it. I've been on the board since, I don't know, like 1993 or something. Not a founding member of ZAP, but shortly after. It's a great mission. The current director, executive director, Becky Robinson, and her staff are so dedicated to this mission as well of getting the love of Zinfandel out to the general public and why it's so important and why it's become America's grape. It has certainly, it was certainly popularized when Zinfandel in general became very popular in California, and up until 1970 was the most widely planted grape in Napa. So you can imagine how
it's changed over the years.
You can imagine how that's changed over the years. Exactly right. But Zinfandel still remains very, very important in Napa. If for no other reason, for its heritage. And ZAP, God bless this organization and all the dedicated growers that want to be a part of it. And since it's a statewide expression, people that come to these tastings, and in my opinion, are very, very fortunate because they're experiencing what you mentioned earlier as terroir, that these wines are really expressing all these different sites up and down California. And they're from both very young and very old vineyards. But they're expressing these sites. And it's just a fantastic view into this category.
Now, I've often referred to it as California's heritage grape, but you said America's. Is it understood and appreciated around the whole country?
Maybe that's our job. Exactly. I would certainly be, pushing that because I think it should have that honor. It is, in my opinion, a very noble grape, and these old vineyards. There's a reason why these old vineyards are in the ground. It's because they're loved. They're growing in the right place, but they're loved and they're appreciated. And people, customers, when they really are exposed to these and take the time to learn them and study them, they find out why.
On that topic, are you finding that the younger generation is kind of losing the interest in Zinfandel? And is it a harder thing for ZAP to get them to understand that's the history and why it is so beloved?
Well, I would say that's a multi. So the whole thing with, let's just say, alcoholic beverages, right? There's a lot of options for everyone to taste now. These days in particular, there's a wide variety of price points, styles of Zinfandels and wines in general, but in particular Zinfandels, that younger people, people that, or just people in general, want to just like nose right up to the category, they can easily do it. And younger people, I would say they have a lot of maybe distractions with other beverages and other categories and whatnot. But I don't see it as an uphill battle at all. I actually see, because one of the good things is that there's never been a higher quality of Zinfandel on the market than right now. There just hasn't been at all kinds of price points. And so when these young people, whomever, jump in, they're just simply going to be impressed. And they shouldn't be afraid.
I'll tell you, my 28-year-old niece who moved to the Bay Area a few years ago, and she went to ZAP's Grand Tasting a couple of years ago and absolutely loved it, of course.
Right, okay. And your niece would be in perfect company because there's this event brings out the people, and it is a fun event for all ages. But I tell you, the younger group in their mid-20s and early 30s, they see it as a kick. It's a beautiful day. Get to experience all these great wines and meet the people behind the wines. And there's something about it, even I, when I go to a tasting, I mean, I've been doing this my whole life, but I actually get excited when the grower or the winemaker, whomever, is like right there. And I actually get to like learn from this person. And even I get excited. And I remember these moments, especially if it's a hard to find wine, if it's a hard to find person, and I'm actually talking to this person and drinking their wine. Doggone it. I mean, I get excited. And so I can see why these people come and they're getting their first look at this category, possibly. Well, this is a great day to get a first look, let me tell you, because everybody's in the room.
As you can tell, Bob has sincere excitement about the Zap Zinex Grand Tasting event. I would think that you, my faithful listener, would be inspired by that excitement to feel the desire to attend and meet the nearly 100 winemakers or winery principals who will be on hand sharing their Zinfandel. As I mentioned, the next big event is in New York, January 2nd through the 4th, or catch it again next year in 2021 in late January in San Francisco. You know, we were talking a little bit ago about things that disappear. So at this point, I said,
you know, on that topic of it going away, it's the same thing with a great vintage where you just totally fall in love with the flavor of a certain wine in a particular year. And then the next year, it's not quite the same due to weather and all the other conditions that are involved. And you lament the fact that it's gone. But it was so wonderful when it was there. It's kind of like a relationship that just didn't work, but you really had a good time with it.
Oh, you're poetic. That's very good. You know, but that's the part of the joy of wine. You know, I guess if it was around all the time, or, you know, that particular wine, that particular vintage, that bottling, if it were completely available all the time, you know, part of the magic would be gone, right? It's part of the reason why I think a lot of us get attracted to this category of beverage, right? In general, it's a particular moment in time that we want to experience and have that emotional connection to, and people may have tasted that particular wine, you know, in France or in Piemonte, somewhere where they have this emotional attachment. And for some reason, wine does that, and they want to relive it. They want to relive it on at their home. And when that bottle's gone, it's like, doggone it, that's my last one, you know?
That's the joy of it.
That's the joy of it.
It's a frustration.
You're right. It could be the frustration and the tears of it, but it's also the joy of it. Yeah, I love it.
Well, thank you for letting me taste the 2016 next to the 2017 Black Chicken, and certainly a difference between the two.
Sure.
The 16 is very smooth and creamy and a delicious wine. You can taste some more of the tannins in the 17, and I'm sure that will calm down over another year or two.
Right, sure it will. And 17 was a bit of a different vintage also, like we're talking about differences, right? The 17 has a little bit bolder, richer style because of this three-week continued heat spell that kind of drove that. But in time, and over time, over 10, 15 years, they'll definitely start coming together if they last that long. Most people just drink their Zinfandel, which is perfectly fine also. but I'm a fan of older wines in general, so to watch them go on.
As you can tell, Bob Bialy is a real down-to-earth guy. I enjoyed my time talking with him. I had some time left on my radio show, so I included a discussion Bob and I had before the interview got underway. It was a chance for my listeners to be a fly on the wall, in a sense, as Bob and I talked about some older plantings and wine varieties. I'll include that audio here on the podcast as well. Shortly into this, we'll get to another respectable organization he belongs to called the Historic Vineyard Society. You may have heard that organization mentioned previously on my podcast. The group includes some of the wine industry's most admired people who have a love for the history of old vineyards, and they do their best to preserve and catalog the old vines throughout Northern California and as far south as Cucamonga Valley, east of Los Angeles. But this recording starts where Bob and I were talking about the older, rarely seen variety called Early Burgundy.
You know, originally in France, in southern France, and it came here, and it became one of those popular varieties to plant alongside other things, you know, mostly Zinfandel, you know. And I think it was probably used as a hedge, you know, like as a grower. It came in early, and for frost protection and whatnot, if the Zin took a hit, the Early Burgundy was still there, good viable crop.
That's good.
Or vice versa, right? But anyway, it's hard to find these days unless it's in these old vineyards.
Yeah.
And that's why we really honor these old vineyards, because it's about the only place you can find these very cool, distinguished varieties.
Good to see you involved with the Historic Vineyard Society.
Yeah, that's...
I talked to Joel Peterson a number of times.
And
Tegan as well, too.
Sure, and Mike Officer. It was Mike's idea, and it was a great idea. And he bounced it around, and he finally, like, all right, let's do this. And he came up with this plan, and it evolved. And then it took some legs, and now it's really become an organization with a great mission, which is to document all the old vineyards in California.
And try to save them.
Well, that's the idea, right? And, like, get people to become aware of them. Mm-hmm. And not only just the public, but... sometimes it's the growers that are the ones that need to be educated, in the sense that, you know, like, hold on to that. Like, if your grandfather or somebody planted that and you're being tempted to take it out now for whatever kind of reason, economic or whatever, try not to.
Yeah,
you know?
I've heard that they've crossed them that were pulled out just now because of ignorance, not knowing exactly what it was, and then they find out later that it was historic.
Right. And so we try to look at it like, if you've got 20 acres of this fantastic old vineyard, all right, if you have to, if you really, really have to because of economic reasons, save a portion of it. You know, like, whatever, as many acres as you can, save it, and then let the rest of your ranch work and make your money, but save this little portion. And that message seems to be getting across, but not to everyone.
Right.
But in any case, it's a glimpse in time right now. If you look at the website, at this moment in time in California in particular, but in California, this is what's in the ground. And it's an interesting view of of what we're farming now. Most of these are in fantastic shape. And what drives them to their death is some kind of a marketing decision or some kind of economic decision.
Yeah, which is the problem in Croatia with the original Tribodrag, which became Zinfandel. And they were pulling it all out and planting Cabernet. And it's like,
crazy.
No.
Crazy. Right. Well, that's exactly what our little situation in Napa went through, right? And we all know that story. It ended well for a lot of growers, you know, in the 60s. That new vision for Napa Valley was to really chase the French model, you know, the Burgundy and Bordeaux varieties, and to chase that success, which was a good mark to look at. But we're not the French, we're California. And the varieties that grow here do very well also. But in this particular case, Cabernet does do well in Napa.
It worked out well.
It worked out well here.
But right. I've heard before that had it not been for Prohibition, we would probably be drinking more Italian varietals.
You're absolutely right.
In this area.
Absolutely right.
A lot more Sangiovese would have been planted, more Barolo, you know, some of the bigger Italian varieties. As well as Zinfandel, Primitivo.
It would have been much more diverse, right? And that's kind of what we're lacking now in Napa. I mean, the good news, the new Napa vision took off and lots of growers can make a living now. So that's great. People are making a living. But it came at kind of a high cost, like you said. It removed, you know, hundreds of old, beautiful vineyards and possibly a different vision. But in any case, Nappans are happy now. they're making a living.
Interesting insight from Robert Bialle. You can read more about what the Historic Vineyard Society is doing and see a list of the many vineyards they have registered at historicvineyardsociety.org. Also, go to their tickets page to see details on their annual vineyard tour and dinner. It always sells out. The site hasn't been updated for 2020 yet, but should be soon. I thank Robert Bialle for his time and sharing a little bit of his black chicken and petite Syrah with me. Excellent wine. And don't forget to visit Bialle.com, Bialle.com. Thanks for listening to today's podcast. You can find past interviews at onthewineroad.com, on podcast platforms as On the Wine Road Podcast. I'm on Facebook as On the Wine Road and Instagram as JD Wine Road. If you have yet to do so, I'd appreciate you subscribing to my podcast and rating it on iTunes. Music heard here comes from First Come. Please be a good neighbor and stay safe and healthy as we muddle through this virus madness. Thanks for joining me on the Wine Road. I'm Jeff Davis.